welcome to the Nature Garden Podcast with me, Carl Steinson, and the Weekending Show team from Lionheart Radio. In this episode, it's an autumnal and All Hallows Eve spectacular. Tom Pattinson reveals the science of autumn colours and how to grow your own pumpkins. Tom Cadwallader is looking at the folklore of scary birds and the spooky superstitions inspired by owls and crows. And we've got some ghostly goings-on as Steve visits one of his favourite haunts in search of the White Lady of Cresswell. Plus some top tips for the garden from Tom P. All coming up on the Nature Garden Podcast. When I was a lad, we carved a jack-o'-lantern, a turnip baggy, and went out penny for Halloweening. There wasn't a pumpkin in sight. But things change, as do the clocks, and we adjust to darker nights. Here's Tom's guide to neeps and pumpkins. Hello, Tom.
Well, this is an exciting time in the garden. It's harvest time, Halloween, and of course the beautiful leaf change, the changing colour of trees and shrubs, deciduous types, just before they shed their leaves. I've been watching the activities in a local alley garden, really watching the excitement and people going around, and it culminates this weekend, of course, with all sorts of trails and excitement, children screaming. It's just something to be there. And it's so simple. It takes me back to childhood, or my misspent youth, very early years, when we used to look for the closest farmer's field in the countryside and look for a swede or a turnip or a baggy, as we called them, or a snadger. They've got all sorts of nicknames. But swedes, farmers could grow them much better than anyone in the garden. Get a large one, cut the top off, scoop out the central part with a knife, ouch, watch your fingers, and then cut two eyes, a nose and a mouth in. And finally, we'd put a candle in there, a short candle, light the candle, probably through the nose or the mouth or something, and put the lid on. Oh, the smell of the heat of that candle, the flame going on to the raw flesh of the turnip. And we used to go round the doors at Halloween, scaring people. Oh, amazing. Well, now it's much more sophisticated, of course. People have got pumpkins. They grow pumpkins themselves. It's a member of the marrow family, courgette. So if you can grow a courgette or a marrow, you can grow a pumpkin. Problem is, they tend to trail. And if you plant one innocently, it can end up about 3 metres long. So you need to nip it, of course, to stop that growth, to concentrate growth some stage, to concentrate growth in the fruits. All fruits, no matter whether they're vegetable fruits or fruits on fruit trees, they need moisture, they need constant water, they need to swell, and it's mainly water, and of course feeding. So look for a pumpkin, giving you, say, two good fruits per plant. We might just have room for one, and water it as much as you can. Don't let it go short of water anyway during the growing season. And of course, a weekly liquid feed, which you will appreciate. And then when it comes to approaching Halloween, you should have a decent sized pumpkin. And you know, if all else fails, don't worry about it. I was in the local supermarket last week, and there was a heap of them, fairly large pumpkins, and they were £1.50 each. But it's far better if you grow your own, of course. Now then, I'm also looking around and I'm thinking about the leaf colour. I have some shrubs in the garden, several shrubs and one or two trees. And the shrubs, the Viburnum bodlantense dawn, the pink flowers, have clusters of pink flowers have just started coming out about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And they will flower all the way through up to Christmas and beyond, up to next April. What value for a single stem cutting I took years ago and keep on taking hardwood stem cuttings at this time of year. And that one, single one, Viburnum, gives me so much pleasure. Not just because of those flowers, which are very fragrant, of course, but the leaves. They're generally green, but you should see the colour, the fiery reds and so on, coming into those leaves now. Because, of course, it's a deciduous plant, and it's about to lose those leaves. And it's one of many trees at the moment, and shrubs, which are just lighting up the countryside. So when you think about it, you've got the beautiful harvest in the garden, the colours from, I have bright lights, which is a lovely shard, leaf beetle shard. It's got beautiful assorted colours of stems and the leaves, of course. We're eating the leaf and the stems blanched and steamed. They're brilliant to look at and brilliant to taste. And there's so many other vegetables coloured at the moment. And then there's the Halloween and all the excitement of that. And then finally, those beautiful leaves, the leaf change. I want to mention more about leaf change and trees in a moment.
And a timely intro to Tom Cadwallader from the British Trust for Ornithology, who's delving into the folklore and fairy tales of birds, often associated with witches and spells and superstitions. Watch out, folks, this might get a bit scary.
One for sorrow, two for joy, three for a wedding, but four for death. So the original saying goes about magpies. But you've got to think, my goodness, it's got an awfully bad press, but it makes it perfectly ideal for a Halloween bird species, no 2 ways about that. But you've got to think, how on earth did it get such a bad reputation? You've got to go back into folklore, and it's all kind of steeped in pagan symbolism. And, you know, the chattering noise that the magpie has, it was thought actually this could actually be a human making that sort of noise, that chattering, chatter, chatter noise it makes. And also it was thought that the magpies have said to have a drop of the devil's blood in them. It could well be linked with this chattering as well, of course, because it could be containing humans, you know. So that is all kind of spooky. But then you kind of think back to some of the other pagan symbolism, and it said that the magpie is the only bird which refused to go into the ark, preferring to sit on the roof and chatter as the world drowned around it. And it really enjoyed the sight of bad fortune. Also, the magpies have never been baptised. In fact, it contains the bodies or the souls of the people who have never been baptised. And it is thought that this is a species that never went into mourning during the crucifixion. But, you know, you think, well, actually, that whole thing is just creating such a really poor sort of impression of a bird. But you can see where this whole kind of bad reputation comes from. But it's not just the only member of the crow family that has this bad reputation. Ravens is another. And ravens, for me, is just one of the most sort of intelligent of birds. They even have I think they've got a sense of humour. But the name has been virtually unchanged since Anglo-Saxon times, and it's locked into Anglo-Saxon folklore. And the ravens also is considered to have the souls of the unbaptised in amongst them, just as well as the magpies. And in Denmark, seeing a raven foretells the death of a pastor, a vicar. And in France, it's thought that when a wicked priest dies, they become ravens. And you think, well, why does this all kind of link back to this kind of this all unholiness about these species? Well, actually, both ravens and magpies, indeed all of the crow family, they eat carrion, you know, dead things, and they often seem to be picking over the corpses. And in some tales, the ravens are linked back to the death of Celtic warriors, obviously during the battlegrounds where lots of dead warriors were there. The ravens and magpies, of course, will have gone in and fed on the rotting corpses. So it kind of makes you wonder, but that's all kind of linked back. But both of those species, you know, the carrion crow as well, and the jackdaw and the rook, they've all kind of got those sort of eating the flesh about them, and hence they're perfect for Halloween. And you think, well, actually, Edgar Allan Poe, when he wrote The Raven, his kind of very, very famous poem, "Take the beak from my heart and take thy form from my door." Goodness me, pretty strong words, but that kind of conjures up the tales of the whole thing about ravens and magpies and ha 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 things that go bump in the night. But actually, things that go bump in the night can relate to birds as well. And it's not just the kind of you think about the barn owl. The barn owl, well, owls generally, they make such crazy noises at night in the dark. And of course, they're silent flyers. And they're linked with witches as well. And even Shakespeare used the whole symbolism of owls and witches. You know, a witch's potion is never ripe without it containing some form of a bit of a barn owl, whether it's part of their foot or their tongue or their bill or something like that. But it's fascinating, actually, that the potions and spells contain these things. But, you know, this time of year is perfect. Back of October into November, owls are making all of their screechy noises. And what they're doing, really, is to setting up territories for the next breeding season. So it's normal behaviour, but it's been caught up in this whole kind of mixture of what goes bump in the night, the screeching and the scratching and the twit-twoo, all of that sort of business. It's all spooky, and it all relates to kind of Halloween. Man, it's just so incredible. But one thing's for sure about owls, they couldn't give a hoot. There you are then. Halloween.
This is the Nature Garden Podcast with Carl Steinson, Tom Pattinson, Tom Cadwallander and Steve Lowe.
Tom's celebrating the colours of autumn and how trees and shrubs change their clothes and create the vibrant reds and golds that we love. And he's making the most of death and decomposition in the garden as the leaves fall to the ground.
Some people are asking me at the moment, the plants' leaves are changing colour, deciduous trees and shrubs, and we know that they will fall shortly. But what tells them to start changing colour? And the answer is simple. In this case, it's light and warmth, or lack of it, it's temperature and light. At this time of year, there are shorter days, and the temperature is falling. And that, those two are the catalysts which start the process off, which we call deciduous in shrubs. So I often link it with fireworks displays, because I think I call the colour change at this time of year in leaves my nature's firework display. It lasts much longer than the Guy Fawkes Night, November the 5th, flashes and bangs and whizz and lovely colours and sprays in the night sky. This can last longer. So, what is the tree and shrub up to when it decides to lose those leaves? Well, if you considered, if they stayed on board, there's a lot of water content in them. that freeze and expand when frost arrives, and that expansion destroys cellular tissue. And when the frost goes, they just collapse. So that the parent plant, the tree and the shrub which bears those leaves, it's put at risk. But it also realised there's quite a lot of good quality food in those leaves, the nutrients, and it wants to rescue them, do a salvage operation, get them back into the parent plant, the tree, before they fall. And that's what the process is about. The process shows us the green leaves turning into various colours, the yellows, the browns, and the oranges. There we've got a name for those. They're called carotenoids. These have been actually pinpointed as the names of those different colours, those chemicals. We have the red one, anthocyanin. That's been identified as well. What's happening is, as the chlorophyll essential to food production or photosynthesis in the leaf, as it starts to degenerate, fade, those have been hidden by it, and now they're uncloaked. And I recall my Trekkie experience watching Star Trek The Next Generation. They will say, Jean-Luc Picard, there's an enemy ship in the area. It's undercover. We need to uncloak it. And suddenly the screen it's had up, cloaking it, is revealed, and there is the enemy ship in front, starship in front. Oh no, that's how I look at it. And they've been lurking all the time, doing a good job, those other chemicals within the leaf, and now we see them in their glory, and what a show it produces. Anthocyanin, I would say, is the most important one, for me anyway. That's the red one. It has the task of keeping the nutrient salvage operation from leaf to parent flowing, and transporting the veins that transport it, keep them open. It's a race against time. The cell's base of each leaf stem, that's the cell base, that is going to be jettisoned at some stage. Hopefully when the process has been completed, there is a separation layer forms at the base of every leaf stem. And once it's formed, the leaf falls off. When the leaf falls, of course, that's not the end of the story, far from it. The parent tree cannot possibly get all of the goodness, the nutrient value from the leaf sometimes. And when it falls, it's still of value to us. That's why we scoop it up, rake it up into piles, get a black bin liner and squeeze as much as possible into that, or feed it onto your compost facility. And if it's in a bin bag, tie the black bin bag at the neck once it's really full, can't squeeze any more in, and get a fork, hand fork even, and prog into the sides so that some air will get in, and put it out of sight for many months, and it will lead to leaf mould. If you put those leaves into your composting facility, they will come form part of a fantastic compost which you can use on the garden. So it's a beautiful spectacle, watching the change in leaf colour before they fall, but it can also be very practical. You can put it at practical use, save those leaves and compost them.
Now, it's time for a ghost story. And please, it's not for the faint-hearted, so be prepared for a horrific tale that ends with some advice that you may or may not want to heed. Here's Steve Lowe and the Spooks of Cresswell Peel Tower.
Well, this Sunday, the 31st of October, as everybody will probably know, is Halloween. That's the day before All Hallows Day, which was also known as the All Saints Day. And the word Hallows is a derivative of the word hallowed, meaning holy or sanctified. So it's really quite odd that we have this festival which doesn't really seem to fit with that kind of sentiment, if you like, that spiritual sentiment. And it goes all the way back to Celtic times, when the Celts believed that the doors to the afterlife would reopen and the dead would revisit the earth. And for them, that wasn't anything to fear, because there was a great reverence to people who had lived before. So it's a slightly different type of festival to the one that we now have, which quite honestly has become very Americanized, and is, you know, from that point of view, celebrated, if you like the word celebrate, in a very different day. However, this year, on the 31st of October, I happen to be working at Cresswell Peel Tower. And the tower is open to the public for probably for the last time this year, between 1 and 4. We've got a lovely art exhibition on. We've also got a little bit of music. We're also hoping to be planting up to 2,000 bluebells, English bluebells, into the woodlands. So if anybody wants to help with that, it'd be brilliant. And anyone who comes along in fancy dress, let's say, well, there may be a little treat in store. And if you need a reason to come other than those fantastic reasons, obviously, then why not come and have a little look for the White Lady of Cresswell? The White Lady of Cresswell is a long established local legend, and it relates back to what we think was possibly a member of the Cresswell family, certainly a beautiful young lady who was engaged to be married to a Danish prince called Rollo. And this prince, she was awaiting him one day, standing on the top of the tower, waiting for his sail to appear on the horizon. And eventually she saw the ship arriving and all his men rowing the vessel towards the shore. She obviously became quite excited and disappeared down to make herself ready for his arrival. When she came back to the point at which she'd first seen him, the ship was just about to hit the shore. The boat came up onto the beach of Druridge Bay, and out of the boat came Rollo, a beautiful and gorgeous boyfriend. He waved to her and then started to advance up the beach, obviously leaving all his men behind, because he was excited to be making this visit to see his love. And he lost all of his inhibitions, so was very easily caught by three people who appeared in front of him, drew weapons, and murdered him. This was seen by the princess on the tower, and she was obviously absolutely bereft of all emotion. She was devastated by this event, particularly when it turned out that these men were actually her brothers. Presumably, they feared that Rollo would take either the riches of the family as a dowry, or perhaps were disapproving of the fact that he wasn't a Saxon, as the family were likely to have been. In fact, he may well have been called what we call a Viking now. From that point on, the lady refused food. She had a broken heart and eventually succumbed to that broken heart. And ever since that day, she's been seen standing on the tower waiting for that visit. And I have to say, it's a really spooky place at night. It's very dark. I haven't seen the White Lady myself, but I know people who have, and people who feel her presence when they're actually in the tower as well. So much so that I've taken to carrying a stone with me, which is called a hagstone. And a hagstone is a traditional charm, if you like, to keep away witches, ghosts, and evil spirits. And I found mine on the beach at Druridge Bay, perhaps left there for me by the White Lady.
here's Tom with some things to be getting on with in the garden.
And so to jobs for the week. I've been on the vegetable beds, the raised island vegetable beds, tidying each one of the six up. And we have other beds, of course, with for the asparagus and the strawberries and things of that nature. But these six are key to the vegetable growing. And the ample space, I have two of them occupied by leeks and brassicas, winter brassicas, Brussels sprouts, things of that nature. I'm keeping an eye on those, taking the older leaves off the sprouts, the yellowing leaves, which is normal, the lower ones down the stem as they progress. The sprouts are forming fine, but the rest of the beds need tidying up. It looks ragged at this time of the year, the vegetable plot, so all the green material, the leaves, etc., that goes into the composting process. So they are ready for action, the empty beds, when the spring comes. Between now and then, I'd put a layer of well-rotted horse manure on the surface. We haven't dug those beds over for a long, long time. Years, I'm talking about. We simply plant into them. There's a process which is just like all aspects of gardening, or most aspects of gardening. What goes round comes round. The thing at the moment is no dig for vegetable, but it's been going round for decades, and it's not a lazy way of doing things. It just simply works. And if you did strike your spade down into the soil, you'd find the worm population was brilliant. When I do this with the trowel, it's worthwhile. You can see how good it is performing. So that's being done off the vegetable bed, and then move on to indoors under the glass in the cold, unheated greenhouse. We still grow a crop of lettuce, leaf lettuce, throughout the year. And winter's no different. We simply sowed them about 2-3 weeks ago. They took about 4 days to germinate. It's leaf lettuce, the salad bowl, just that ordinary lettuce. And believe it or not, well, I have mentioned it before, -5 sometimes in the greenhouse. It's at one stage last year, and it will get that low this time, -5 Celsius. But these lettuce leaves just carry on and give us leaf cut and come again basis way until March. It's brilliant. So they're in there working the way, and I've got some pots of Charlotte potatoes, second cropping potatoes. They're outside in big pots, just 5 large pots of them. Beautiful foliage at the moment, and they're growing on. A couple of weeks' time, when the frost is threatening, I'll bring those into the same unheated greenhouse, and they'll grow on, and we have those for Christmas. No problem at all. Fresh potatoes for Christmas. It always works. It's really worth doing. So I'm bringing the chrysanthemums in, the late chrysanthemums. They've got buds on them now. There are about 12 different large pots of covering about 5 varieties. So they will come in to join the white chrysanthemums I have at the moment. I'm looking at the lawn because the lawn looks ragged as well, or it did, until I cut it. Once you cut the lawn, the rest of the garden is lifted. The whole atmosphere lifts. It looks good again. But I'm not cutting it as low as it was in summertime. I've moved up a notch, the cutting area, the cutting blades. So they're a notch higher, and never cut it low at this time of year. Give it a chance. It takes a lot of killing off grass, but what will be in the grass is moss. It's one of those things you either live with it or you try your best to eradicate it. Moss occurs in the garden because you have poor drainage, or because you have acidic or impoverished soil. It could be that it's overshaded by trees and things like that. The shade casts all the time. So you live with moss, or you fight against it and try to get rid of it. And of course, you rake it out with using either a springback rake yourself mechanically, or you get in some form of scarifier driven by motor-driven scarifier. After that, holes in the lawn to aerate it. the prongs going in. It can be a garden fork, anything of that nature. And then a top dressing. That's if you're looking after a lawn and you want it to be brilliant and first class. Mine is not first class. It's a natural area with some call them weeds, but I call them wildflowers. And they're kept under control. It looks decent. It's been cut. Apart from that, I've just trimmed the hedges, and most of the hedge cuttings have gone into the composting facility. I'm harvesting the late apples, that's the Bramleys, and things of that nature. And planting outdoor containers up, just finishing that off. Oh, it's a busy time, even in autumn. Whatever you're doing, enjoy your gardening.
You've been listening to gardener Tom Pattinson, birder Tom Cadwallader from the British Trust for Ornithology, and Steve Lowe from the Northumberland Rivers Trust and Cresswell Peel Tower. I'm Carl Steinson, and don't forget, you can listen back to all the previous reports we've done on the Nature Garden Podcast. That's the Nature Garden Podcast. Enjoy your gardening and time outdoors with nature. And bye for now. Happy Halloween!